I want to invite all the kids to come forward. Blake and I are going to start this morning with kids, and then Gene's going to come and bring you up. But y'all want to come forward just for a bit?
All the kids.
And y'all can sit on the floor or stand for a sec as Blake talks a bit. Hey, St. John's, this is my friend Blake.
Hi, guys. And Blake? I have my kids here. This is Summit and Charlie and our friend Violet, and where's River? And River's right there. And then my son Wubetu here is filming.
And we're glad to have you guys here. Blake, you and I have spent a lot of time in church together.
Yes,
we
have. But
not necessarily in Jackson Hole, though we have been to this place many times. So here we are. We're talking about your work around Enough, and we've got a message for kids, and then we have a message for grown-ups. Where would you start?
I think that, you know, really for the kids, you know, my message really is very simple, and that is that we are all enough no matter what. So no matter if you get good grades in school, or you make the soccer team, or you score a goal in the basketball tournament, you are enough just as you are. And when I was a kid, unfortunately, I did not believe that. And that caused me to not feel good inside my heart. And once I realized that I was enough no matter what, just because I exist, because God created me, I started to feel much better in my heart. And so now we make these bracelets. We make them by these beautiful women in India. And they say, enough. My kids are wearing them right here. And they're going to give each of you one when you go to Sunday school. And we wear them every day as just a very simple reminder that we are enough just as we are. And I kind of feel like it's like a little like secret weapon whenever I'm having a hard day or maybe not feeling so good or maybe didn't do good on the test or something. I look down at it and I'm reminded that I am enough. And I want you guys to hopefully have that message as well when you wear it around town.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Yeah?
So Jean's going to come forward. And y'all follow Jean down the aisle, and she's going to make sure that each of you gets a bracelet in the kids' room. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, follow Jean. Technical difficulties. We good? Okay. Got to make sure we capture that sound.
So great to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back here, Blake. So so you've been on an odyssey that includes the top of the mountain and the bottom of the valley, maybe even the valley of the shadow of death, as the psalmist says.
Sure.
Can you tell us about your depression and anxiety and you start it however you want to start it? You can start with Tom's.
Sure.
You can start with tennis, whatever.
Well, I think I'll start it with selling Tom's, because that actually brought me to here to Jackson Hole. So I started this shoe company called Tom's Shoes in 2006. And for those of you who don't know Tom's, the model is very simple. Every time we sold a pair of shoes, we gave a pair to children around the world that didn't have shoes. And before that, I'd started four or five businesses at a very young age. And before that, I was a championship tennis player. I'd been very achievement-oriented my whole life, now that I look back at it. But I think with Tom's, I felt like, and during Tom's, looking back now, I really felt like that was kind of, and that was kind of filling this void in my heart that I didn't realize I had until recently. And when I sold the company, my dream was to live in the mountains here in Jackson Hole, snowboard all the time, you know, drop my kids off at the pumpkin patch and then go straight to the mountain, which I did. And but what I didn't know when I sold the company was, you know, what would follow. And what followed here in Jackson and Jimmy was really there for me, and my friend Tom, who's here, and some others, you know, was I really started to realize that I'd lost my purpose. You know, giving shoes to children and building this business and helping so many people was very purposeful. And so when I sold the company and moved here, I kind of lost my sense of purpose. I also lost a lot of my community, even though I met some great men here and for snowboarding, and we had a men's group. You know, most of my community was still at Tom's building the business. And the other thing I didn't realize is that it gets dark here at like 5 p.m.
And for part of the year, it does.
Yeah, for a big part of the year. And I'd lived in California for 20 years, right? And so
Southern California.
Yeah, Southern California, yeah. And so year one was pretty good. Year two was pretty good. But around year three, I had become a great snowboarder. But I started to feel the first signs of depression, and I had never experienced that in my life before.
Wait, riding a snowboard is not a sign of depression?
That's good.
Like maybe those signs were coming on a little earlier.
That's good. I love it. Oh man. It's not probably any big surprise. When I sold Tom's, you know, we had given 100 million children shoes. So
wow.
It was a big business.
Yeah.
And so when I sold it, I also got hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, I think as an entrepreneur, you'd think like that is going to be, we know that money doesn't buy us happiness, but then at the same time, we think, well, maybe I can, you know, have this wealth can help me kind of, you know, shelter me from the feelings of depression that I was feeling. So I built this crazy house here in Jackson. I started going on these vacations. I started doing all these things externally to try to feel better because I was feeling, worse and worse. I got divorced, unfortunately. And a lot of things just started kind of spiraling for me. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, was desperate. And so I actually thought, okay, well, maybe I need to change locations. And so I moved my family and my ex-wife and all my kids down to Costa Rica. And I thought that would help. And for about a year or two, you know, kind of the newness of that. But then I started getting even worse down there. And so there I was in what I thought was paradise, you know, and surfing every day and something I love and getting worse. And so long story short, we ended up moving up to Marin, Northern California, about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got there, I realized like I couldn't, like I tried everything externally to feel, I didn't realize it was to feel enough, but it was to fill this void inside me. And, you know, now that the kids are gone, I can be really honest, you know, it got so bad that I stopped sleeping. The anxiety got so strong. I was filled with shame of all the mistakes that I'd made in my personal life. I was estranged from my ex-wife. I was even having trouble like being present with my kids on the weekends that I had them. And I thought about killing myself. And not just once, but pretty much every day for 3 months. And it was so scary now that I think about it. And I started isolating and stopped calling people back. And I made a plan. And thank God I ended up reaching out to my friend Tyler, who's here, and my family, my parents, and a few others. And I started getting a lot of help, and ultimately started to, you know, begin this healing journey that really lasted, you know, for over a year, and I've been feeling great for about a year now. So,
I remember when
it's a long answer to your question on depression.
No, we have time. Here we sit in eternity. So, I remember when I got a text from you from Marin. You were headed to Costa Rica. You said, hey, can we connect? I'm headed down to Costa Rica. And we found a time to meet. We scheduled a Zoom or a FaceTime. I remember I was taking that call upstairs in my room and seeing your face on Zoom or FaceTime or however we did it. And having this inner experience of like, oh my God, my friend Blake is thinking about killing himself. That was the first thing that entered my mind when I just saw the gravity.
Yeah.
We chatted about the depth of your depression, and we might even call it despair.
For sure.
And the only thing we could really get to, other than connecting one to another, was this idea of the absence of self-compassion in your life. And so we talked about you looking at Kristen Neff's work, and can you tell me a little bit about your experience with Kristen's work, and maybe you could even fill in how she's come alongside this new work, but we don't have to get there yet.
Yeah, maybe we'll get there in a minute. I think the main thing was, and if there's anyone in your life that you know is really struggling, the thing I say now is just, like, they just have to be able to talk to one person, whether that's you or someone else. All the research shows that, you know, the risk of self-harm goes down significantly if they can just be honest with one person. And I thankfully had a few people, Jimmy, and interesting, Tyler's here with us. His kids are with us for the ski week. And then Wubetu as well. I was less probably honest with Wubetu because I didn't want to scare him. And I thought that would be a lot to put on one of your children. But it's really so important. And that we'll get to the bracelet and how I think it can help with that in a second. But I remember Jimmy just saying, you know, he introduced me to Kristen's book, Self-Compassion, and this idea that, you know, that a lot of what I was feeling was a lot of shame, you know, a lot of shame for different decisions in my life that compromised. Now I see that compromised my values. And that work was really, really helpful. And just to try to understand why we don't have self-compassion at times, which leads very much to the enough work. But I think the most important part of that conversation wasn't even that you pointed me to a book or something I could kind of hold on to and read and really understand that, you know, that I am not the sum of my mistakes.
Yeah.
But it was really just having you say, hey, I'm here for you. Let's talk again in 3 more days, and let's talk again. And those calls and those kind of promises to Jimmy and to others that I was going to be around in 3 more days is what really kind of kept me here, you know, because I kind of felt like I now had some people I really loved that I was committed to, you know, talking to again. But I think that is the most important part of that conversation, really, was just knowing that I could tell someone, really, like, I'm not okay. Not like I'm stressed or I've lost my purpose or I'm getting divorced again, but like, no, I'm like really, really not having good thoughts, you know, and that was super helpful. The thing you also did that was so great is you didn't try to necessarily say it was wrong that I was thinking those thoughts. Like, you didn't try to talk me out of being in a suicidal state. You acknowledged it. You brought it. You welcomed it into the conversation. And I think that was very astute, because knowing that it is a possibility in a weird way kind of de-escalates the possibility.
Yeah. There's that wisdom that comes from Brené Brown's work of, like, shame can't survive being spoken.
Yes.
But that, like, extends beyond, too, of, like, let's just talk about reality. And, you know, I should also say, like, sometimes these conversations can be triggering for people. They can bring up past experiences or present moments. If you're feeling those feelings right now, you know, please grab one of the clergy. We also have Beverly, who's here and leads the Teton County Health Suicide Prevention Program. So there, you know, it happens. But we talk about them honestly and transparently. And because of this idea of we are enough, we're beloved. Like, and I also want just briefly talk about, you know, when you and I connected, you know, it, when we get desperate, oftentimes in our desperation, we're just like, give me something to do.
Yeah.
Like, get, like, tell me to go to Israel or to eat only protein or to avoid gluten or to get in the, you know, cryo chamber, just like anything to relieve my distress. And the conversations that we had were like, welcome depression.
Yeah.
Welcome anxiety. And your first instincts were that, were like, no way. Yeah.
Like, after two of those talks, I was like, new person.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Too much.
It was a welcoming. And the thing is, so part of the story is, you know, is while I was depressed, I was also misdiagnosed as being bipolar 2. Mm-hmm. And I got put on 4 different pharmaceuticals that really messed me up. And I think that led also to the situation. So at this time that I called Jimmy, I also was weaning off, because I met an amazing psychiatrist who was helping me wean off these meds. And there's nothing wrong with meds, but for me in this situation, they clearly were not working and causing me to be almost a shell of myself. And so that was also a very hard process. And if anyone's going through that, you need a very good, you know, medical care to do that. But as I weaned off, my psychiatrist also was very much telling me what Jimmy was telling me, and that was kind of like, welcome it. Like, it's here to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And so what I've now looked back at is a lot of this I thought was happening to me, but now I can say it was happening for me, and it really was a deep spiritual initiation. And so as I weaned off the meds, as I got more clear, as I was doing, you know, multiple days work with this psychiatrist, we started to see it as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And in one of the sessions, a very deep session, almost in some state of a hypnosis, I think, he was able to lead me back into my childhood. And I was able to see for the first time in my life, holy, I almost said shit, but yeah.
We had an F-bomb at a funeral last Friday, so you can say whatever you want in this place.
So I was like, this guy's name is Dan, Dr. Dan. I said, Dan, I've never in my life felt that I was enough.
Yeah.
And he said, and he, of course, was there with me. And I said, and it was just like this amazing download from Spirit where I was like, oh, my gosh, like, I think this is it. This is the thing that has been haunting me all these years. And I could see like the tennis and the, you know, I mean, I used to be like obsessive about tennis, and then the businesses, and then inviting and having certain romantic partners that unfortunately really, you know, kind of triggered that wound. And then just the stuff with the money and this and that. And I was starting to see for the first time that, you know, that this feeling that I'm not enough had been pervasive my whole life, and really starting when I was young. And so, you know, through that process, I think it's kind of like maybe like someone who's an alcoholic, the first step is admitting it, right?
Yeah.
And so the first step for me was like realizing and saying out loud, wow, this has been, you know, here this whole time. And admitting it and recognizing it actually didn't heal it at first. You know, it was more of like an acknowledgement. And so then,
because awareness doesn't necessarily bring about healing.
No.
Right?
Yeah. And so, but what did really work, and, you know, and we did a lot of different things, but one of them was something very simple. And so it was this mantra-based meditation that he gave me, where for 40 days, every morning, and every evening for 20 minutes, I would close my eyes and I would simply sit there by myself and go, I am enough. I've always been enough. I am enough. I've always been enough.
Hmm, beautiful.
And at first it was very hard to do. Yeah. I thought it was really silly. At week 2 or week 3, I almost tried to find a new psychiatrist. I was like, I'm not getting any better. But something really beautiful and I believe holy happened around that 4th week. And I remember looking at my timer, because I set it for 20 minutes, and it went off. And I was like, hold on, oh shoot, I must have set it for 2 minutes because it happened so fast. But I looked down and it said 20 minutes and 30 seconds or something. I was like, that just doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no way I've been here for 20 minutes. I've been doing this for weeks. I know what 20 minutes feels like. It feels like a long time. And sure enough, you know, I just started to feel something different within my body. And I continued to do it. And I still continue to do it, not every day, but on the hard days when I wake up and I feel not enough. And I think that there's something there with, like, reprogramming, you know, the subconscious, you know, and really repatterning even something going on. You know, I don't understand the brain as well as others, but with your neural pathways,
yeah,
to start to really believe that. And so that was a big part of, for me, the beginning of the healing journey. And then there's been many things, you know, since then.
And you and I mean, within the context of our friendship, for the most part, absent some pretty fun adventures that we've had, for the most part, our friendship has been based on spiritual experience.
For sure.
And spiritual experience, like, defined yeah. by Christian context
yeah.
or the Jewish Christian tradition.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me. And you're not the only one, of course. And I mean, like, this, of course, happens to me, though. I'm a religious professional, and because I am, sometimes people don't believe it. I struggle to
yeah.
connect to my enoughness
sure.
or my own belovedness. But so much of the teaching that we have from our sacred story is this basic teaching that you're bringing us in the sense of, like, there's nothing new under the sun, but God does articulate things in different ways at different times through different people in order to get through. And I'm thinking about, you know, everything from manna that comes to Israel, like, just shows up on, you know, in the morning, covered with dew, and then humanity's inclination to, like, well, here's this bread, we better gather a bunch of it up, and then it gets moldy in a beautiful way. Or daily bread, or we get those, you know, that passage from Matthew 6, which is based, you know, following Matthew 5, where we get the Beatitudes and the Blesseds. There's this, in the following chapter, there's all this conversation of, like, don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry about anything, whether it's the consider the lilies of the fields, or it's Eugene Peterson's consider the ravens. Ravens are so much a part of our spiritual experience, not just in Jackson, but on this campus. Like, it's like a raven sanctuary. And then, you know, I think the message that I love the most is this, like, lo, I am with you always.
Yeah.
And that comes from the Hebrew scriptures through the Christian scriptures into our experience today as spiritual people. Why don't we get it? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it's all there in the story, but we don't feel it.
I think that, Jimmy, I think that our culture, I mean, when someone asks me what was enough, is it, you know, is it a new nonprofit? Is it a fashion brand? Is it an accessory? I say it's a cultural intervention. And I use those words very carefully, because when you think of someone who is an addict, or someone who's really suffering, you intervene in their life, right? You have an intervention, and you get the people around them that love them, and you say, hey, we see you, and you're on a path of destruction, and we want to help you. So I think it's the same thing with enough. What we're trying to do with culture is that I believe that our culture is not getting it, because I think our culture is constructed in a way, especially with young people and social media, is to always be comparing ourselves to others, and that somehow we don't measure up. And I think that started with me at a young age, but I think it's even more prevalent today. And so that's why I think, you know, we need something to come back to. We need reminders that we are enough just as we are, and this moment is enough. And I think one of the things that I have found that is just a very practical practice in all this is I've recognized in myself through lots of therapy is that when you don't feel enough, you're either always living in the past or you're always living in the future. And so break that down for a moment. So when I didn't feel enough, I was always living in the mistakes of my past. I should have done this. I shouldn't have sold Tom's. I shouldn't have gotten a divorce. I shouldn't have moved to Jackson. I should have stayed. I mean, whatever, because I didn't feel that I was enough. So I was constantly living, and a lot of that brings in the shame. At the other times, and I wasn't, you know, ruminating about my past, I was worried about my future. Well, if I do this, I'll feel enough. If I build this house, I'll be enough. If I get remarried, whatever, trying to figure out anything in the future that could make me feel enough.
Yeah.
But when you really can kind of start to feel this and practice this feeling, and enough is my word, you might have a different word. You know, it might be wholeness. It might be, you know, grace. It might be something else. But I'm using enough because it means something to me. But when you feel enough, and when I look at this and I think about, okay, today I'm enough, then I'm living in the present, you know, because I'm not worrying about the future. I'm actually in this moment right here. And I think of all the things that I've learned from the Bible, I think one of the things that has always stood out to me is this verse, and I don't know the right verse, but about the kingdom of God is right in the now.
Yeah.
Right? Or something like that.
The kingdom is now.
The kingdom of heaven is now. And
it's
so
in
we
the
really,
present moment.
If part of this practice of being people of faith is wanting to be in the kingdom of God, then the more we can live in the present, more we get to experience that. And I'd say in my life, the biggest, like once I got past getting out of the severe depression, and once I started to heal that and really feel that I was enough and understand my depression, that was step one. Step two has been about living this, like a life that feels more peaceful and joyful and present than ever before. I mean, life today feels so different than the first 48 years.
Yeah.
And it's because I feel like for the first time in my life, I'm fully here right now. Like as I look around and look in people's eyes, like I feel I'm here. And that to me has been the greatest gift in all this. And that's why I say to people all the time, like I would go through the hell that I went through all over again if I knew that it was going to lead to this moment or to the presence of skiing with my kids this afternoon.
Yeah. And I went kind of searching for enoughness in the sacred story.
Mm.
And just in anticipation of
yeah,
our public
sure,
conversation.
Of course.
And what I landed on was just like the name of God. Like when Moses... And we could even say, like, symbolically, Moses is struggling. It says, like, Moses is tending his father-in-law's flocks. They're not even his own sheep or goats. He's out tending his father-in-law's goats and sheep beyond the wilderness. He's not in the wilderness. He's somewhere beyond the wilderness. And he happens to see this burning bush. And the story says, when God says that Moses saw, then God began to speak to him.
Mm.
This idea of, like, God's always been there. It's just Moses happened to finally see the burning bush. And when Moses asks God, who am I to say I have encountered here? And God's response is, I am. Tell them I am sent you. And I was like, oh, that's it.
Mm.
There's the enoughness. The enoughness is just being itself.
Yeah.
It's breath. It's presence. It's not even an open heart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can have a closed heart, and we're
still
enough.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that's such a beautiful moment, and you're bringing that to us. Mm. You know, you haven't brought us a bush that is strangely not consumed, but you've brought me a bracelet that reminds me anywhere from 3 to 50 times a day that I am enough, that I'm beloved, that the measure is just my existence.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be achievement or accomplishment.
No. And I think beyond this being something that is personal for you, what I found, we just launched this like 5 weeks ago, so I'm learning every day, But what I am also seeing that just makes my heart so happy is that it's also a signal to others that I'm here for you. You know, it's not just something that we wear ourselves. We ask someone to give it to at least one person. So when we sell in this box, and there's one for you and one to give. Mm. And when you give it to that person, you're saying to them, like, I'm here for you. I'm willing to have real conversations. And to me, that has been some of the real magic of this, is having that bond to someone else. You know, there's a little poem that comes with it. And in the poem it says, I wear this as a symbol for myself and as a bond to someone else, a blessing and a gentle push to never give up, because no matter who you are enough. And I've been so touched by that.
Yeah.
By that connection. And I think that's what we need more of in our culture. And the more that we wear it, not just for ourselves, but as a bond to someone else.
Yeah.
I think the more the collective healing can happen.
Well, and that was a surprise to me when, you know, I received the bracelets in the mail. I didn't expect two to be there. Mm. And I put my bracelet on right away. And then I entered a period of discernment of like, okay, who's getting the second one? Because like, we've been through some shizzle in this church in the last many months.
Yeah.
And then I had this moment, because like, it came during the Christmas holidays, and I had this moment where I was chatting with Jade in her room, my daughter Jade, in her room, who you know quite well.
And, yeah.
She was like, Dad, what's that? And I was like, oh, it's Blake's new thing. And she was like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, what? Like, I was like, I'll be right back. It's like, I get it, Spirit. You're sending me a message, yeah, like that this is the person. And like, what a joy to give that to your child, right?
Oh.
Especially as you reflect as a parent, when they get to college, you're like, wow, I have done, accidentally, with best of intentions, a lot to help Jade feel like she's not enough.
I mean,
like, not on purpose,
no,
but you're just like, oh God, yeah, that was me. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I say that to her all the time. She's like, Dad, what? I was like, oh yeah, sorry, my fault. Like, just to be clear, not a professional, just a practitioner. Let me ask you one more question.
Yeah.
If we got it, like, you know me,
yeah,
you know this church, you know this community of Jackson Hole.
Yeah.
If we got it, if this message landed, and it landed in the very center of our hearts, and maybe it only lands for 50% of us.
Yeah.
What would you imagine for this church?
Well, the first thing I would say is I want to define landed, because this is not something that really lands.
Yeah.
This is something you practice.
Yeah.
There are days that I still wake up 4 a.m. anxious about, ironically enough now,
like, yeah,
like, did we ship out the bracelets on time? You know, do I know what I'm going to say to Jimmy on Sunday? You know, did I email that person back? You know, whatever. But no, so I want to define landed is not a destination. It is a commitment to yourself for if it takes 3 times a day or 50 times a day to remind yourself that you're enough. And
not landed, but landing.
Landing.
Not
forever.
Learned, but learning.
So
yeah,
if this congregation, this community, if each of us are committed to learning and landing this message, I truly believe there will be more experience of the kingdom of heaven every moment.
Yeah.
I really do, because I have found with myself and even my kids, my 11-year-old Summit, you know, the sense of calm, not every day, not every moment, but there are these deep moments where I'm touching something I've never touched before.
Mm.
And that is that feeling of just presence, God. Like,
yeah,
it's that is what it is. It's that, and I think, and it radiates around you. You know, there's this feeling of that when we have a certain consciousness ourselves and a certain feeling, it affects all of us around. Kristen Neff, yeah. Just to go back to her for a second, I just interviewed her for my podcast, and she said there's this thing that goes on called mirror neurons.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is that the people we spend the most time with, our neurons and our brains actually start to mirror each other. Mm-hmm. And that's why our kids, you know, do what we do more than what we say, because mm-hmm. they feel us. But it's also about this community, you know, whether it's with your work, with your family, with the people sitting in these seats. The more that we start to really feel that enoughness and practice that ourselves, the more people around us get to relax, because yeah. they'll feel enough just by us doing that work. And it really is something that I believe, you know, we're 5 weeks in. What happens in the next 5 or 50 years, I don't know. But I'm committed to creating more mirror neurons in everywhere we go, so that we can all just relax and enjoy this beautiful life we've been given.
Thank you, Blake.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming and being a part of this. Thank you for the work.
Thank you.
Yeah. Love you.